Welcome to Conversations at the Crossroads, a ministry of Crossroads Church in Sandy, Utah, where we discuss topics related to scripture texts, theology, and the culture around us. We're glad you could listen in today. Come join us for the conversation.
Welcome to another conversation. I'm Matt Amati, one of the pastors at Crossroads Church in Sandy, Utah, and I'm joined, as always, for these conversations by Ken McCulley. And Ken, one thing you were talking to me about recently, as we often talk about, is music in the local church, as you lead our music on Sunday mornings. And you brought up hymnody and this genre of folk music and how the two are either related or have been disconnected. And so why don't you just kind of get the ball rolling with talking about that particular issue and what is actually going on there?
Sure. There are a couple of ways to divide music into major buckets. So there are 1,200 genres cataloged right now, thereabouts, but you can really drop all of them into one of three buckets. One of the ways that we've traditionally looked at music is in the divide between pop music on one extreme, art music on the other, and in the middle is folk music.
Classical music would be art music?
That would be some of it.
Okay.
And also, a lot of experimental music is going to be art music. Art music is anything that requires special knowledge, special education. It could be, just for example, that someone's listening to opera, and in order to really benefit from it and not just be entertained or bored, they're going to have some special training in understanding what is the story, how are they conveying the story, and so forth.
I see.
So art music could range from classical music to John Cage and some of his experimental. Think of art music as well as some of the bizarre things that we've seen in the visual art community, where you know a urinal, La Fontaine, is presented as a meaningful art piece.
Wow.
So you'll get that in the musical area as well. On the other extreme, you've got pop music.
Yep.
Pop music is like it sounds. It's popular music. This really started around the 18th or 19th century, where you started having kind of pulling out of the classical areas. You had music that was shorter, simpler, designed for popular consumption. It was missing something, though, that the older category, which we would find in the middle of folk music, had. Folk music was very accessible, very simple, usually transmitted for most of history orally rather than in written scores and arrangements.
Yeah.
But it was also rooted into a community. It was deeply rooted either in an ethnic community, political, and so forth.
Yeah.
Or a religious community.
Sure.
In the case of hymnody.
Right.
And hymnody really is folk music. And part of the problem that we've had in the worship wars is people were kind of fighting over hymnody. And on one side, you had art music and people saying, oh, the holy sound that we should have is basically Western classical.
Right, this highly, almost technical, skilled presentation of music, and that's what we should sing in church, or our songs should be set to that kind of music.
Right, and people, even today, will associate classic hymnody with art music when it's really not.
Hmm.
On the other extreme, you had people pulling in the direction of pop music, and we still have probably the majority of Christian music today is pop music.
Pop music, yeah.
Not necessarily here, we don't want to think in really strict secular categories, but it's popular music. It's kitschy. It's very, very simple. You don't need specialized training, but it's not really tied to a particular community.
Yeah.
The sound, this is where the complaint comes in, well, the sound is worldly. Well, sort of, although that's often ill-defined.
Yeah.
But really what we want to get back to, and this comes from a number of sources who are arguing for this, most recently I read it in a book called Church Music for the Care of Souls.
Hmm.
And we want to get back to folk music. And you know, for those of a certain vintage, don't think Smothers Brothers,
right,
and Kingston Trio and Peter, Paul, and Mary. But we want to get back to the idea that Christian hymnody. Now, and here we're not saying that there should be no Christian art music or no Christian pop music.
Right.
But for congregational hymnody, a recognition that when it was brought back out of the art community and the professional musicians, the paid musicians of the Catholic Church by Martin Luther, his goal was to craft Christian folk music.
Yeah.
Simple, accessible, it can be transmitted orally, it can be spread throughout the community fairly easily without special training, and it's tied tightly to the history of the church.
So what would be the kind of distinguishing elements of folk music in contrast to pop music? Because it seems like someone would say, well, pop music is simple, it's easy to sing. And so what exactly, maybe define that distinction a little more.
It's going to be a lot more lyrical depth in folk music because you've got a robust, thick body of doctrine, of theology in the case of hymnody.
Right.
It's pop music is going to be kitschier. It's going to appeal directly to feeling. Although you and I were talking about it before, there is a shift underway into more narrative songs. One of the secrets behind Taylor Swift being such a megastar is the narrative nature of her music. But folk music is going to be narrative as opposed to, as I said, sort of more emotionally driven, more feelings driven. It's going to be, again, primarily what we're looking at is something that's rooted deep in the community.
Right.
And it's going to have deep roots in the church. So with Christian pop, the lyrics are going to be a lot more generic. You're going to want a broader appeal.
Sure.
If you look at just pop music in general, what we see is there's this tendency for the American powerhouse production facilities to absorb other cultures' music and Americanize it and then put it out for mass consumption.
So pop music is not going to be as concerned, for example, about conveying theological truths or describing and articulating important doctrinal issues that are rooted within the community, the church community, the history of the church, because, again, it's at a popular level.
Right. It's going for broadest appeal as opposed to a specificity in the lyrics theologically that is going to limit the appeal.
Right.
For example, we can look at examples from church history where George Whitefield, Calvinist, loved one of Wesley's hymns and went to Wesley and said, can I fix this? And the lyrics that we have now at Crossroads are the Whitefield version. But there's that specificity as opposed to very generic, broad appeal lyrics.
Would then on the other side, the art music is the reason Christian hymnody is more in this folk music center because with art music, maybe not the issue of lyrics, but the music itself is going to be hard to adapt in a congregational setting. Is that what's going to drive hymnody more towards the folk genre as opposed to the art?
Right. Think for theological richness, think of Johann Sebastian Bach's masses. And in one, there's a movement, Sanctus, where he's kind of building in this Trinitarian framework. There are threes. The number three goes throughout the piece. But it's going to be really hard to catch for someone who's not musically trained.
Sure.
It's also difficult because the lyrics aren't in English.
Right.
We could say the same thing about Handel's Messiah. It's a beautiful piece. It's a rich piece. And it deserves to have repeated hearings. But you're not going to profit from it as readily because there's a lot of musical training involved to really appreciate what's going on.
Yeah. So the folk music and Christian hymnody fitting into that genre, is that the case, would you say, for all hymns, whether old or modern, that are being written for congregational singing, that are conveying theological truths, that are aimed at having a tune that is singable, that is what this genre is distinguished by, and that they all fit into this folk category?
That's the ideal. Now, moving from the mid to late 19th century into the 20th century, there's a sort of a movement that you'll see in the hymnals, where originally the hymns had been largely written by pastors, by theologians. The hymn would be the lyric. Technically, we're talking about the lyrics, yeah. Not the lyrics and the tune put together. So the pastors, the theologians would write the lyrics, and a few of them would also write the tunes. Luther, for example, was a skilled musician. Mm. He worked with some professional composers, but he also wrote the music for a couple of his hymns. But for the most part, pastor theologians are writing the hymns and setting them to folk tunes, yeah. Or musicians are coming along later and writing tunes for them. But quite a few of them are written to very common pre-existing folk tunes, right. not bar songs, as the internet wants to claim, yeah. But things from, say, the Sacred Harp or Walker's Southern Harmony, collections of very simple, singable, yep. Folk tunes. That's the ideal, but 19th to 20th century, you have the rise of the songwriter, and you'll start to see Fanny Crosby, yep. And others, and this is not a knock on them,
right.
But what you'll see with that is the focus moves somewhat, and you move from these deep, theologically rich writings of these pastors,
yeah.
With a pastor's heart, moving into the more experiential songs, or even at one wing, the militant songs, Hold the Fort, Onward Christian Soldiers.
Sure.
As the missions movement kind of goes around, yep. The earth, you start to see that. But you know, the songwriters bring in a much more experiential, inward-focused writing,
right,
and we start to drift a little bit, from folk music into more of a pop music. Although we wouldn't think about it, you know, about Fanny Crosby, no. Being pop music today.
Well, it's encouraging that there seems to be a resurgence in the pastor theologian, maybe the combination of the pastor theologian kind of person and the songwriter, with guys like Boswell or the Gettys or...
Anderson.
Yes, we sang an Anderson song this last Sunday where you can see in the lyrics the richness and the depth of what's being sung and communicated. And you can really pick up on that this is not just a popular level, broad appeal kind of song.
Right.
But it is written very intentionally with an amount of nuance and insight that is conveying biblical truths in a singable way. And I think we're seeing some more of that, which I think is encouraging.
Right. We are well into a hymn renaissance.
Yeah. It
kind of kicked off with Townend and the Gettys, In Christ Alone, and a, right. Couple others, where the tunes and the harmonies are actually written more in alignment with what you'd find in the classic hymns.
Yeah.
And That has spread, and it's wonderful to see. We have just an embarrassment of riches today of new hymns.
It is encouraging, and I would encourage people to check some of these out if they're unfamiliar with some of these writers, like Matt Boswell or the Gettys, or Chris Anderson, I think, is less well-known, though his songs are really well done, and I've been very encouraged by his hymns.
The Churchworks Media out of Texas.
That's right.
Definitely worth looking into.
Well, thank you for listening. If you have questions, feel free to email us at conversations@crossroadschurchutah.org.